Carnival World, Chapter 56. Once Mystica flew, spinning out over the edge of the cliff, literally all hell busted loose on the ancient temple top. Pandemonium reigned as the northeastern wind blew taints of blood, sweat, and skunk ape stench. The new odors of the suddenly stiff breeze overwhelmed the former scents of old dust, seashells, and ozone as it fanned out over the southeastern rim. Ranger Kai furiously pumped his shotgun whenever an enemy combatant appeared. Bruce Kai was the son of a former Hawaiian chief. Kai, not literally large as an ocean, his surname suited him amazingly well. His father had not been the chief of the main island, but a minor one. Kai had held championship titles in underwater spearfishing and shotgun. He had won both local and state tournaments for submerged spearfishing and trap, skeet, five-stand, and sporting plays. Bruce had planned on becoming a Navy SEAL, but Zales, who had met Kai's father on a chartered fishing trip in the waters of Kauai, talked him into signing NDA documents, and the Islander joined Alpha Team Rangers instead. Maria Orsic Schmidt's M24 rifle swatted from her hands, spun towards the girdling font. The sniper rifle had clattered across the tiles. Once it ended its airborne journey, the weapon just missed the Rode camera tripod, which was still recording. Ranger Schmidt, as a result of her forceful disarming by the Wolfman, stood, cursing, blood dripping from her left forearm and wrist. The sharp edge of the M24 wide-angle easy-flip scope had gouged her. Maria had swiftly drawn her combat buoy with her right hand. Her hand clenched tightly around the pommel, then her stance automatically braced into a defensive position. Ranger Schmidt bravely faced the snarling wolfman that towered over her a full 2 feet. Foaming at the mouth, the great beast howled, gurgled, and laughed at Maria as she expertly sliced, diced, and punctured his hairy flesh. Finally, tiring of his sport, the wolfman smashed the blade out of her hands. After that, with little effort expended, the brute, giggling and howling like an overly excited hyena man, slapped her with an open palm across her face. The blow that stung and gushed crimson from her broken nose bowled her head over tea kettle. The horrific werewolf leaned back, his intelligent brown eyes the epitome of domineering evil, and howled. Bangled, slurred curses, akin to modern Earth French, burst from its frothing jaws. Dropping onto all fours, it prepared to leap forward, aiming for Maria's delicate throat. Padre scowled between Bard and Schmidt, anguished at his choice. Finally, he threw his last cryptid stunner potion at the two wolfmen and one rogue Sabi that were surrounding Bard. One solid thumping bang shattered the chaos between Kai's shotgun blasts. The outhouse door slammed as Jose scrambled inside and locked the door. Padre's potion hit 2 out of 3 wolf monsters in front of Bard. While they were stunned, Bard dropped 2 of the beastmen with 1 hard, wicked swing, decapitating them. But not before one of the wolfmen raked Bard twice, left and right, with long, sharp claws. Those hands were large, but human, and not beast paws, but the long, hard nails sliced just as deeply. The monster wolfman followed the initial attack with a wolf paw disemboweling kick. Orlando dodged the wolfman's kick. Bard felt himself bleeding heavily from the chin, throat, shoulders, chest, and thighs. Minor wounds of former skirmishes, none seriously dysfunctional individually, but in combination, leeching his fortitude. He fell forward on his knees. The wolfman to his left howled and stuck out its massive chest, but did not immediately advance. The other wolfman leaned back, howled, then leaped, snout bared menacingly, slobber gushing through its jagged teeth for Orlando's throat. Without warning, a blinding burst of golden light flashed over the entirety of Snake Butte Mountain's temple top. Memories from Bard's past, childhood memories, memories of Cryptid Team 4 missions, and his most recent adventures on Carnival World zoomed by with breakneck speed. One memory of a movie scene dominated his mind, silencing all the other reckless, leaping, spinning thoughts. He remembered a poignant scene from The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. Gandalf's dramatic arrival at sunrise, the powerful scene at Helm's Deep, reminded him of the intense golden light that now flooded the Snake Butte Temple. Out of the intense golden shimmer stepped two glowing, beautiful human entities, larger than Carnival World barbarians, both easily surpassing 7 feet in height. The first, a handsome man, possessed golden flowing hair like a lion's mane that fell past his broad, muscular shoulders. Jazz sported an oiled, dark gold Van Dyke. Gently and slowly, he sat Mystica Norn onto the light gray, shell-imprinted temple tiles. "Don't be afraid, Mystica. I will not harm you." Jazz was wearing a scintillating mithril chainmail vest over a light purple sleeveless pullover shirt of fine silk that displayed his smooth, sculpted, rock-hard musculature. The Malik was attired in a royal purple leather cape that draped down his broad, finely shaped back and shoulders to mid-calf length. Jazz stood with the powerful presence of a Scandinavian warlord. The Malik, built like a granite cliff fortress, his long, strong legs were clad with master-crafted, knee-high, gold-buckled and studded buccaneer boots. When Malik Jazz gently placed Mystica Norn on the ground, there was a mixture of deep elation and thankfulness that warred across her elvish face, vying with her stormcloud emotions of vivid shock and anger. She was grateful for the rescue, and curious about the strong, manly, divine being that had rescued her. However, Mystica was frustrated and angry because, strangely, she had so little control of her body. She lay on the tiles, curled in a fetal position, shaking like a leaf pummeled by a brisk breeze. As Malik Jazz stepped away from Mystica, he seemed to walk in graceful, larger-than-life slow motion. The movement mimicked the low angle, increased frame rate, slow speed playback filming technique meant to create a dramatic, powerful presence for heroes in high-budget fantasy movies. Malik Jed, the other entity, stepped forward, cat-like, in the same flowing, majestically slow, heroic style, onto the embattled, bloody environs of the ancient temple top. Mystica was not the only person flopping like a frightened fish out of water. Both Rangers Kai and Maria, sprawled helplessly on the temple tiles, were doing the same spastic dance. Dr. Kimball, near the eastern rim of the temple top, had also fallen, limbs trembling as if she were under the throes of St. Vitus' waltz. Big J, Jorge, and Gomez were shaking lightly, but still standing not far from Daphne. Jose was still hidden, door locked inside the lime green porta potty. Bart felt the wounds on his body closing, as if he had the same regeneration power of the cryptids. He surveyed the battlescape around him. Orlando's blood was mixed with the blood of the dead cryptids. At first he could not tell the difference between his blood and the blood seeping from the pile of Squatch and Wolfman bodies piled near him. But after a few seconds, Bard could smell the difference. Bard knew then that he had lost a great quantity of blood, but not as much as the decapitated monsters around him. His great orc metal hand-and-a-half axe, like the mythical blade of severing in a Dungeons and Dragons campaign, had severed limbs and necks. He was dizzy. As the last wolfman of his enemy trio prepared to pounce, he fell backwards, knees akimbo, dazed, yet feeling his body miraculously beginning to heal. Just then he saw Malik Jazz, as those unique lavender eyes flashed brightly. Time seemed to stand still. The wolfman that should be biting his throat was still frozen in mid-leap. Malik Jed quipped, "Well, brother, it looks like we have arrived for another rescue fashionably late. There were more snake gods in their hybrid offspring than we had anticipated, replied Jazz with a scowl. They slowed us down, Brother Jed, but it cannot be said that we bollocks the mission. Hold that thought, Brother Jazz, quipped Jed. Jed was almost a twin of Jazz, but not quite. Jazz was blonde and Scandinavian in appearance, his forehead bold and brooding over large lavender, intelligent eyes, ensconced in a chiseled rectangular face. Jed's eyes, angled, almost Asian in appearance, were bright, glowing emeralds. The Malik's eyes often twinkled. That, combined with his customary half-smile, heralded that numerous humorous comments lurked within, eagerly longing to escape and roll, dry and droll, from his witty tongue. Jed resembled a gypsy king of late colonial Earth, not only in facial features, but in his style of dress. Too many comical jabs from Jazz in the past, calling his gleaming neck-to-ankle plate mail as over-the-top horse barding, had led to an upgrade in his battle accouterments. Malik Jed's black hair, long but still significantly shorter than that of Jazz, was tied back in a thickly braided three-stranded pony. The braided trio, clasped together at the bottom, were positioned with a speckled camel and fawn tortoiseshell comb. His Caucasian skin, well tanned, was even darker than that of Jazz. Jed's face was an inverted triangle, wide at the forehead. Beardless, his strong, narrow chin did not possess the sharp wedge quality common to the elves on Carnival World. Jed dressed like a 19th-century Earth Romani prince. His fine, elegant garb was a combination of the expensive and the practical. The rich flowing fabrics, intricate embroidery, and decorative jewelry were a mix of chocolate brown and forest green. Over his chest he wore a light but strong and dense star metal vest, etched and stained in the colors and patterns of peacock feathers. Full cape, also styled with peacock feathers, which ruffled in the temple-top breeze, dropped his shins. The cloak was fastened under the neck with a priceless gold and emerald peacock feather clasp, and again, with a cummerbund at his waist. Jed wore quilted brown, knee-length, leather-padded, and reinforced woolens. His short pants were held up by a black, gold-threaded cummerbund, studded with sparkling sprays of small, glinting white diamonds and tiny emeralds. The green-eyed Malik's feet were clad in thick-soled, chin-high, braided Athenian sandals. Jed did not wear the extravagant black or brown leather feathered hat common to princely gypsy leaders. Such a cap that would have been a natural addition to his attire was absent. However, his fine black hair, not quite reaching the back of his shoulders, contained several tiny braids held in place by fine jewels, scattered upon his head like glitter. Jed pulled out two glowing emerald green energy swords. They hummed and glowed like a Star Wars weapon. But the hum and the pitch were different. The Malik leaped toward the wolfman, who was about to sink his fangs into Ranger Schmitty's neck. "Not today, hellhound, and never again," snarled Jed. Curled in a fetal position and shaking uncontrollably, the angle of her fall had left Maria's pretty neck unprotected. The gypsy-like Malik did not use his weapons. Upon landing, he simply pivoted smoothly in place, then Sparta kicked the wolfman away from the Lady Ranger and over the edge of the butte. Padre and Anselm seemed the least affected by the fear and weakness that had paralyzed the adventure team. Jorge, Gomez, and Big Jay were standing, their knees slightly wobbly. Mentally, the three Latinos were dazed, but not shaking, cool even in the warm breeze, but not chilled. Dr. Kimball, like Mystica, Maria, and Kai, was curled up in a fetal position, trembling erratically. Jazz sprinted, faster even than Mystica, when she exhibited her short spurts of Nordic Elf Super Soldier mode. During those times, when the Nordic Elf genetics augmented her abilities, she could move as fast as a Carnival World courier, using bracers of blinding speed. except that she could fight. Bracers of blinding speed only allowed the wearer to run and resist damage. Jazz shook his wavy blonde hair, and although he was not a lion man, he shook his hair 3 times, just like a lion shakes its tail before it pounces. From nowhere, a great glowing golden shield appeared, held aloft and ready with his muscular left forearm. In his right hand, the mallet clasped what would have been a two-handed lance to most. It ruffled, hummed, and glowed the color of lavender. Tipping the golden lavender-bladed lance back across his right shoulder, he bull-rushed the wolfman, who was leaping onto Bard. The wolfman launched off from his shield and over the edge of Snake Temple Butte. Jazz dashed like a rocket-propelled grenade over the edge of the temple and skewered the wolfman with a blitzkrieg thrust of his lance. In a flash, Malik Jazz returned. He bull-rushed another group of wolfmen and squatches that had just amassed along the western edge, sending them all flying and flailing off the Snake Butte Temple. Jed quietly walked over to Padre and Anselm in his legendary hero walk style, peacock cape fluttering. He chuckled, "You two can pick your jaws up off the floor any time now. I, favored fathers, am known for my patience as much as my witty remarks. That said, you will need to pull yourselves together, Padre and Anselm, and quickly, since you are both devoted servants of the Lord Most High. You have not suffered as much mental and physical trauma as some of the others. You are highly resistant to our auras. To make a fine point even finer, brothers, that means you are expected to tend to the needs of the rest of your team until they regain their strength." Jed put his energy blades away. They simply vanished. The weapons were replaced by 2 piles of woolen blankets cradled in his arms. Malik Jed divided the blankets between the 2 St. Patrick's Guild clerics. "Take these and go place them at a safe distance from the Coleman stove. I have taken the liberty to speed up the molecules of the tea and coffee pots, and their contents have been increased. That is to say, I added more liquid and reheated them. The camp chairs in the supply area, which were to be unboxed and distributed at supper, are not safe for the ones with the shakes. Grab several padded sleep mats. They are in the same pile as the camp chair supply stack. Both of you work together and aid those who cannot walk themselves, like Bard, Kai, Gordo, Daphne, and Mystica. It will take Gomez, Jorge, and Pinche a few more minutes to acclimate, but they will help Daphne. Orlando Barr is not suffering from the fear shakes, but he lost most of his blood, and several wounds are quickly healing. That is to say, Padres, he's as weak as a proverbial kitten, and his strong will is a kinder, gentler version of Gordo's. When it is time, he too will benefit from your assistance. Put these blankets over those who are in poor condition, and when they are ready, give them coffee or tea. Brother Jazz will provide a hot beverage that the young elf princess may drink." Jed bowed once, and then his glowing emerald longswords reactivated. He performed a long, spectacular leap and landed crouched, just in front of Ranger Maria. Her bleeding had ended and her nose was no longer broken. However, another wolfman had crested the western rim and was loping on all fours towards her. The green-eyed Malik snapped, "Ho there, hellhound! Prepare to be hoisted on your own petards!" Jed, as the wolfman leaped, once again, Sparta kicked it over the edge of the butte rim. Leaping high into the air and somersaulting once, Malik Jed leaped over the edge and ended the life of the falling, howling wolfman. Padre and Anselm, right behind the Malik, walked Maria first to the camp area. She cooperated when they put the blanket over her. When Anselm asked her if she wanted coffee or tea, she responded in her characteristic manner, "Blankety blank, let me stop shaking first, then tea, thanks." Padre and Anselm walked over to Mystica. They tried to help her up, but she resisted. Even though it was difficult, Mystica kept forcing herself into a sitting position and stared over the rim of the temple. She eagerly watched the 2 Maliks jump and spin and kick their way through the monster men hordes. Finally, no matter how hard she tried, Mystica was too tired to sit up when she fell over. Her shaking became more agitated, and she valiantly fought her tears. Anselm offered soothingly, "There is nothing wrong, Señorita, with having a needed cry. We have all been through a hard time, Mystica. But the Lord Most High sent his angels, and we are protected." Mystica, although shaking uncontrollably, brushed away the tears that were rolling down her cheeks. She tried three times to speak, but her mouth was dry, and her tongue resisted its natural use. Finally, she yelled, "Basically, I am not crying, Anselm. I'm just mad." She coughed and rolled into a ball, then demanded, "Just help me walk over to the camp. These effing legs have no right not to work, and my body has no effing reason to shake either." Padre rumbled deep in his chest, shook his head like a wet dog, and grumbled, "Get out of your mind, you wee beastie." Mystica scowled at the dwarf cleric, then just ignored him. Padre and Anselm walked Mystica over to the long sleeping pad, then gently lowered her onto it. After they dropped the next woolen blanket, a purple one, the only purple one, over Mystica, they sprinted off. Padre huffed and puffed like a locomotive as he attempted to keep up with the wiry Anselm Cruz.